and it's been percolating in my head, and I had to study it a little bit more in depth, and that's, I believe, what the Lord has for us this morning. So we're going to be in the 25th chapter of Leviticus, and I want to start in the 8th verse, and I don't know how much I'll read or how much jumping around will do. I'd like to read all the way to the 55th verse, but that's a long reading, and I might spare you all of that, but we'll start in the 8th verse. And thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee. 7 times 7 years, and the space of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the day of atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. And ye shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you. And ye shall return every man unto his possession, and ye shall return every man unto his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap that which groweth of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of thy vine undressed. For it is the jubilee. It shall be holy unto you. Ye shall eat the increase thereof out in the field. In the year of this jubilee, ye shall return every man unto his possession. And if thou shalt sell aught unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, ye shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the jubilee, thou shalt buy of thy neighbor, and according unto the number of the years of the fruits, he shall sell unto thee. According to the multitude of the years, that thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of the years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of the years, the fruits doth he sell unto thee. Ye shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God, for I am the Lord your God. Wherefore ye shall do my statutes, keep my judgments, and do them, and ye shall dwell in the land in safety. And the land shall yield her fruit, and ye shall eat your fill, and dwell therein in safety. And if ye shall say, what shall we eat the 7th year? Behold, we shall not sow, nor gather an increase. I will command my blessings upon you in the 6th year, and you shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And ye shall sow the 8th year, and eat yet of old fruit until the 9th year. Until her fruits come in, ye shall eat of the old store. The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine. For ye are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the land of your possession, ye shall grant a redemption for the land. If thy brother be waxen poor, and hath sold away some of his possession, and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then shall he redeem that which his brother sold. And if the man have none to redeem it, and himself be able to redeem it, then let him count the years of the sale thereof, and restore the overplus unto the man to whom he sold it, that he may return unto his possession. Then it goes on to speak a little bit about some special things for walled cities and the cities of the Levites. Let's skip down to the 35th verse. And if thy brother be waxen poor and fallen in decay with thee, thou shalt relieve him, yea, though he be a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with thee. Take thou no usury of him or increase, but fear thy God, that thy brother may live with thee. Thou shalt not give him thy money upon usury, nor lend him thy victuals for increase. I am the Lord your God, which brought ye forth out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan. And if thy brother that dwelleth by thee be waxen poor and be sold unto thee, thou shalt not compel him to serve as a bondservant, but as an hired servant and as a sojourner, he shall be with thee and shall serve thee unto the year of Jubilee. And then shall he depart from thee, both he and his children with him, and shall return unto his own family, and unto the possessions of his father shall he return. And let's skip down to the 47th verse. It says, and if a sojourner or stranger wax rich by thee, and thy brother that dwelleth by him wax poor, and he sell himself unto the stranger or sojourner by thee, or to the stock of the stranger's family, after that he is sold, he may be redeemed again. One of his brethren may redeem him. Either his uncle or his uncle's son may redeem him, or any that is nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him. or if he be able, he may redeem himself. And he shall reckon with him that bought him from the year that he was sold unto the year of the Jubilee, and the price of his sale shall be according unto the number of years, according to the time of an hired servant shall it be with him. And we'll go ahead, skip down to the 55th verse. For unto me the children of Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And so that, from the 8th verse down to the 55th verse, is the law of the Jubilee. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. Specifically, I want to talk about heaven's Jubilee. And again, if you remember a few weeks ago, we sang that song before we had opening comments, and I made some comments about the true nature of the Jubilee. But I felt like I needed to go back and study that some more. Maybe some of you weren't familiar with the Jubilee or didn't remember all that stuff when I made mention of it there a few weeks ago. So we're going to talk this morning about heaven's Jubilee. So the background of this is the law as it's laid down here in the 25th chapter of Leviticus. So let's just talk about how this worked. And I had to do some studying on this. The Jubilee was to put things back the way that they were. Now, if you remember when the children of Israel went into the Promised Land, God, by the mouth of Joshua, divided the land unto the people. So each, there was an area for each tribe, and then each of the families in the tribe at that time. So when they went in, each family of each tribe got a portion of land given unto them, and that was to stay in their family. Now, as the process of life went, God understood that things would happen. Some people would have better yield than others at different times. Some would be more industrious than others. Some would find that they didn't like farming and they wanted to do something else. The land was their inheritance. The land was the foundation. I want us to understand that. The land was the foundation of their blessing in God. It was all the way back to Abraham, right? The blessing was the land that he was going to give them. That was the foundation. And then from the land, all the other blessings would flow. The great harvests and all these other things. But the land was the foundation of the blessings of God for His people. And so the primary thing that would happen in the year of Jubilee is all the land would revert back to its owner. So essentially, just so we understand how this worked and what he was talking about here. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with, there's a somewhat of a Jubilee movement among some, areas of Christianity seeking social justice through the Jubilee. And they talk about, well, let's have a debt Jubilee and forgive all debts and redistribute land and property and everything like they did in the Old Testament. Well, that's not what they did. That's not what they did. Let us understand how this works. So the Jubilee year was the 50th year. So every 7 years, the land got a Sabbath. They weren't supposed to work the land. The land got its rest. And we understand through, they might not have understood then, but we understand now that land has to be rested. That's why we rotate crops now and those things. You just can't continue to farm on a land, particularly the same thing. You'll wear out the soil. It has to be rested. Well, God knew that even if they didn't. And so He provided for that. He said, every 7 years the land's going to rest. But I'm going to give you such a bountiful harvest on the sixth year, it'll be good for 3 years. So you're still going to have over what you need, but let the land rest. And He said, you count seven of these land rests. So that happens every 7 years. You count seven of those for 49. Then the next year, the 50th year, is the Jubilee year. And that's when all of this happened. So essentially, there was no outright buying and selling of land in Israel. What they did was lease it. You could lease for a term up to, but not more than 50 years. Your lease term was up until the next Jubilee. So what that did is give the ability, if someone was in straits financially, they had land that they could lease to somebody else and get the price up front. And it was reckoned according to how many harvests there were. Now, how they determined how much a harvest was worth, I don't know, but there was some system that a harvest was worth, you know, X amount of dollars. And so there's X amount of harvest left until the Jubilee that calculates to this amount of dollars. So I will lease you the land up to the Jubilee for this amount of money. And you give me the money up front because I need it for whatever. And then you work the land. Well, now, if you're a good farmer or whatever, you work the land, you might be able to do better than what the going rate was. And anything that you made over and above, well, then that was yours to keep. That's why. So some people, you know, liked farming, or they had they built their own little farming dynasties, and they had money. They would go around if they could work it well. They would lease some land, maybe lease some more land. Everything that they made over and above what it took to pay off the lease was theirs to keep. But on the 50th year, everything went back, and so I got my land back. But there was no debt forgiven. Understand that, because I got paid up front based upon the number of years up to the Jubilee. So it was all clear. So what we were celebrating was not that, yay, my debt was forgiven, I owed you money and now I don't owe you anymore, but it's that everything is back where it's supposed to be. We're clear, and the land is back in my family's possession. You have, and we go on. The same thing for selling yourself as a servant. Again, if you fell on hard times, perhaps you owed money and you sold all, you leased out all your land, and you still didn't have enough money to pay your debts, whatever they might be. Then you might hire out yourself as a hireling. And what it says, you were not a slave in perpetuity, but you could hire yourself out as an indentured servant all the way up to the Jubilee. But on the Jubilee, whoever that you hired yourself to, you would go free. Your debt, everything would be cleared by that point. And so there was some practical reasons for this. So that was how the Jubilee worked, is that there was rest for the land, and there was liberty for the people, and liberty for the land, and it went back to where it was supposed to be. Now, the practical reason for this is that God understood how men were, and the gift was unto His children. All of Israel representing His children. Again, not all of Israel was saved at any given point, but the children of Israel as a group represented God's people. And so God gave a promise of prosperity unto His people, a promise of blessings. And the foundation of that was in the land. But one generation, if they were prodigals and profligates, could ruin that, sell off all the land, and then their children and grandchildren would have nothing. That happened in this country some, didn't it? Maybe not profligates, but you know, land that was once the richness of families was sold off, and now where's it at? There's a lot of people around that don't have much, and they think, well, you know, my granddad and my great-granddad owned land. Well, if I had that today, maybe I could start fresh. God understood that, and so one generation through bad management or whatever it might be could not ruin it completely for His children and grandchildren. He could only ruin it for up to 50 years, and then the land would come back for that next generation to maybe do better with it. And so that was the intent, that no family would ever be ruined because of the failures of any one generation, but it would come back in kind of a reset. And my father might be a bad manager and lots of debts, and he sold off all my inheritance, but at some point his debts will be cleared, and then it'll come back to me, and maybe I can do better with it. Or I might mess it up, but my children would get it eventually. And so that was the whole point, because the land, understand this, the land was the foundation of the promise and the blessings. All blessings came through the land, and so God made a way to ensure that that would not be lost for the people. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of how it worked, and the purpose was to maintain the promise, to ensure that the promise that was of blessing and bounty that was given to that first generation when they came in, that it would always be there for each next generation generation. That was the purpose. Now, let's look a little bit more. There was a picture. There was a picture in this Jubilee that we want to try to draw out. First of all, essentially, it happened once per lifetime. Now, depending on when it fell, I might see two in my lifetime. But generally, I would only see one that was going to affect me during my adult years. So I might see one as a child or as a teenager, but that's not going to affect me too much. It's the next one when I'm an adult. So essentially, there was once in a lifetime, but one for everybody. So everybody would see it generally once in their adult lifetime and be able to benefit from it. And that would be, you can imagine as a family, when I was 5 years old, my father fell on hard times and he leased off the land, and we've been poor and sojourners. Maybe he even leased off himself, and he's worked all of his life, and I was, I've come up in this other person's house, and I don't have anything that's mine, because my father is still working off his debt. But there's a day out there coming when I'm going to be set free. My father's debts are paid. If he's still living, he's set free. I'll be set free, and the land will be mine again, and everything will be as it should be. The promise restored, never lost completely. And so it was a great day that Israelites would look forward to. And that's why it was a big doing with the blowing of the trumpet. And it happened once every 50 years, and it reset everything back to the way God intended it to be. So it was a big deal that people looked forward to that day that only happened once every 50 years. There was a coming redemption. That I would be redeemed, the land would be redeemed, whatever it might be. That is a picture of the coming Messiah. Every time that Jubilee came around, it was a picture of the coming Messiah, when true redemption would come, when spiritual redemption would come. Not just some land, not just some personal freedom, not just the ability to make a living for your family and your children and your grandchildren, but true soul liberty and soul redemption is what they were looking forward to. And so all of that long, all of that looking forward to that year that only happened once in a lifetime, and all my life leading up to that 50 years, I'm looking for it. This is the once in a lifetime thing that's going to come, this redemption. That was a picture of the one thing that was going to come, the one man that was going to come, the one promise that was going to come once that would be good forever, and that's Jesus Christ. And so we want to see that Jubilee all the way back there in the Old Testament. Testament was a picture of the coming of the Messiah. Now, Jesus well understood this, and he began his public ministry with a reference to the Jubilee, to bring it all around full circle so that they might understand. Now, let me read to you from Luke in the 4th chapter in the 18th verse. And these are the words of Jesus. This is when he was in that synagogue in Galilee. And he walked in and he stood up to speak. And he's had them bring him the scroll from Isaiah. And he opened it up to a certain place. And this is what he read. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because He hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord." And then he sat down and he said, "This day is this scripture fulfilled in your hearing." And I've tried to preach upon that text and Jesus' using of that text, and how that he came, he was fulfilling a prophecy that was laid down in Isaiah, and that's true. But you know what? This goes back even further. Because Isaiah, he was using language that specifically pointed to the year of Jubilee. When he says this is the acceptable year of the Lord, he's making reference to the Jubilees. Now, how did you get that, preacher? Well, let's look here. The word Jesus is quoting, since he's freely quoting from the Septuagint, and we've talked about how that the Septuagint was written in Greek, was a Greek translation of the Hebrew texts that was put together at about 200 B.C. Because many of the Jews were losing the ability to read and write Hebrew, and so many of them were becoming Hellenized and were speaking and reading only Greek, which was the language of commerce and art at that time. And so Jesus here, as in many other places, sometimes he quoted from the Hebrew, sometimes he quoted from the Septuagint. Here he's freely quoting, meaning not a direct word for word quote, but the gist of using some of these specific words from the Septuagint translation of Isaiah. That Greek word he used here when he says to set at liberty them that are bruised, that's the same word that is used in Leviticus in the 10th verse that I read. He says, "And he shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land and unto all the inhabitants." And you know what? As I did research then on that word in the Old Testament, everywhere that it's used as a reference to the Jubilee Day. And as a matter of fact, Ezekiel uses that word to specifically as a substitute for the term Jubilee. Listen to what Ezekiel says in the 46th chapter in the 17th verse. Ezekiel writes, "But if he give a gift to his inheritance to one of his servants, then it shall be his to the year of liberty. After it shall return to the prince, but his inheritance shall be his sons for them." You see what Ezekiel, he's talking about. He's referencing the law of the Jubilee. He says, if a man give a gift unto his servant, if I give part of my inheritance to my servant, it will remain his until the year of liberty, which is the year of Jubilee, then it'll go back and it'll be his sons. Meaning I can't give of the land unto my servant forever. He could have it up until the day of liberty. That's what Ezekiel's talking about. But I want you to know, he uses that word liberty as a substitute, as a synonym for the year of Jubilee. That's how distinct that word is, that it always in the Old Testament has reference to the Jubilee year. That's the reference that that Isaiah was making. He was talking about the coming Messiah and saying it's going to be like the Jubilee year, but even better. And Jesus grabs hold of that, and he quotes it and says, this day has this scripture been fulfilled. He's not only saying that the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled. He said, I am the Jubilee. This is the setting at liberty. This is the year of liberty. This is the acceptable year of the Lord. The year of Jubilee was the acceptable year of the Lord. That was the year that the Lord set people at liberty. Jesus is saying, now I have come. I am the Jubilee. I am the true fulfillment of that picture that you have seen in the Old Testament, because I am come to set all at liberty. Not just free from a house of where you're a bondservant, not just to free up the land that your father sold or whatever it might be. I'm here to set the spiritual captives free. You see, he is the Jubilee. I want us to see that connection, and that Jesus was making that specifically. Isaiah was referencing the Jubilee by using that word liberty. He was using language specifically from there that any Jew familiar with the text would have understood that that was a reference right back to there. And then Jesus picks up on it for his audience to say, this is it. This is the fulfillment of the Jubilee in me. And so, let's look a little bit then at the proclaiming of the Jubilee by Christ. That's what I want us to understand. The gospel, the good news, that's what gospel means, the good news of Jesus Christ is the proclaiming of the Jubilee. And it's extending not only out to Israelites, it's extending out into the whole world, to the whole Gentile world. Jesus proclaims a Jubilee, and it is not just for the Israelites, and not just restricted to land and those specific things that we talked about, but it is for everyone. The gospel is the proclamation of the Jubilee. And I want us to look at that in some of the aspects of what was contained within the Jubilee. Again, going back to the Old Testament to look at it as a picture and see how that picture is fulfilled in Jesus Christ and in the New Testament with the proclamation of the gospel by the blood of Jesus Christ. First off, the Jubilee starts with the atonement. You notice it started on the 50th year. It didn't start on the first month. It started on the 15th day of the seventh month at the end of the atonement. That was the day, the 14th day of the, rather the 15th day of the seventh month was the day of atonement. And you all know what the day of atonement was. That was the one day that the high priest went into the holiest of holies there to make atonement for the national sins of Israel. And it was very specific, the things that he had to do. He would kill a bullock for his, and go in a prescribed manner and offer blood to atone for his own sins. And then he would go back out, and they had those two goats. The lot would fall on one of the goats, would get selected by random. One would be the offering, and one would be the scapegoat. And then he would take that goat that was the offering, and he would kill it, and he would take its blood into the holiest of holies, and he would offer it in a prescribed manner for the sins of Israel. And it had to happen every year. This was over and above the daily sacrifice. It was done morning and evening. This was a special day that the sins of the whole year were passed over. Then he would come out, and this is important of what happened on that day of atonement. The one goat died, and then the scapegoat, he would put his hands on that scapegoat, and he would confess all the sins of Israel. And he would ceremonially transfer those sins onto that goat. And then it says two strong men would take that goat far out into the wilderness and turn it loose, thereby symbolically removing the sins of Israel and turning them loose outside the camp, never more to return unto Israel. That was, in a nutshell, what happened on the Day of Atonement. And the year of Jubilee started right after that. Right after the high priest did all of that, right after the blood was shed that would cover the sins of Israel, and the sins were transferred to that scapegoat, and he was sent off far away from them, then the trumpets would sound and the year of Jubilee would begin. It had to start with the washing of sins. It had to start with the expiation of sins. It had to start with a blood atonement. And the gospel, my friends, starts with the blood atonement of Jesus Christ, does it not? There is no gospel, there is no good news without the atoning work of Jesus Christ on the cross. He was the fulfillment, is the fulfillment of that picture from the Day of Atonement. What is it that John said there in the first chapter when Jesus came to be baptized of John the Baptist? It says that the next day, John seeth Jesus coming up to him and said, "Behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world." See, John understood, John the Baptist understood then, and John, the gospel writer, understood when he wrote this, that Jesus was the Lamb of God who took away the sins of the world. He was the offering goat and the scapegoat. See, when they did it there, it took two goats because you can't kill one and turn the same one loose. They had to have two, but Jesus was both. I want you to see, he was the offering. He gave his life on the cross. He shed his blood to pay for the sins of not just Israel, but of all mankind. And then not only only that, those sins were taken apart. How did He pay for the sins? Because He was also the scapegoat. God took all the sins of the world from Adam down to you and me and beyond, just like Aaron took those sins of Israel. And God with His own hands put those sins upon Jesus Christ, His Son. And then for the space of 3 hours, He cast Him outside of the camp. For the space of 3 hours, He said, my God, why hast Thou forsaken Me? And darkness reigned upon the face of the earth as He was cast outside the camp. He took those sins as far as the east is from the west, never more to return unto us, just like that scapegoat did. And so the Jubilee, just as it did in Leviticus, it began with the atonement, and the true Jubilee, the one proclaimed by Jesus Christ, began truly with His death, because that's the foundation of the gospel, is the death of Jesus Christ to take away our sins. And so it starts with the atonement. Part of the goodness of the Jubilee was the bounty, wasn't it? Now that whole year, and truly they had just come off of a year, because the 49th year was the seventh Sabbath. So if they were doing it right, they didn't till the ground. They left the ground fallow the 49th year. And then the next year was the year of Jubilee, and they weren't allowed to till the land that year either. But what had God said? God had said all the way back there that every sixth year He was going to give bounty of 3 years. And if you add that up, that's still a lot of bounty that was left, wasn't it? There's a lot of bounty that was left. It would easily get them through that 2 years and beyond. They were still laying up extra by God's reckoning if they were doing things right. So there is bounty. The year of Jubilee speaks of bounty. God's blessings are so great that we can let the land lie fallow. We can basically just have a party and pray God and not do any work for the whole year, because there's enough bounty to carry us through. The Jubilee speaks of the bounty of God. We, brothers and sisters, that have been partakers of Jesus Christ, do we not partake of the bounty of God's mercy each and every day? There in the Old Testament, the bounty was seen in physical things, in a good harvest and big fat grapes on the vine, and in olives and lots of olive oil out of, and all those things that would make life good and easy. But as we've tried to preach and teach before, all those physical, earthly, temporal blessings that that Israel got in the Old Testament were pictures of spiritual blessings for God's people that we would experience in the gospel dispensation. We don't necessarily, we're not guaranteed physical, temporal blessings, but we sure are guaranteed spiritual blessings, aren't we? God's grace abounds unto His children in the Jubilee. He says, Philippians, just read you a couple of scriptures. Philippians 4th chapter, starting the 18th verse. Paul says, "But I have all and abound. I'm full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent to me from you, an odor of sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God." He's thanking them for the things that they had sent him, money and food and things that he needed to survive in this world. He says, he has partaken of the bounty of God because you've given me these things, and I appreciate it. But then he goes on, he says, "My God shall supply all your need according to His riches in glory by Jesus Christ." He says, you have given me these temporal blessings, which I'm thankful for. I was in need of, but God is going to reward you richly through His grace, not necessarily with temporal blessings, but with spiritual blessings. My God will reward you richly by His grace and by His mercy, he says. That's the Jubilee. That's what we can enjoy, children of God, here today, because Jesus has brought the Jubilee. He has brought us the bounty of His mercy, which is there for the taking for children of God each and every day. And we just go into the throne room boldly and fall on our face before God and beg for His mercy and His grace. He'll pour out His blessings upon us liberally. Who giveth liberally, the Father of lights. Yeah, I think it's John, over in one of his letters, maybe talks about that, how that he gives unto his children liberally. Another scripture about the blessings of God. 2 Corinthians in the 9th chapter. Now, the immediate context of this is Paul is talking about the collection for the poor saints in Jerusalem. He's encouraging the Corinthians to give what they've pledged to give for him to take back to relieve the suffering of the and starving of the poor saints in Jerusalem that were suffering through a very bad famine. That was the immediate context. But he says, every man, as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that ye, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. He said, give of the temporal things that you have pledged to give. He said, give it. Give it because they need it. And give it liberally, and give it not grudgingly, but as unto God. And he said, and God, because God will and can provide you of His grace. He'll provide you the things that you need temporally. But over and above that, He'll provide great grace and spiritual blessings unto you, that you may abound in good works. He's going to give you the things you need in this life so that you can abound in good works by His riches of mercy. And so that is the bounty of the Jubilee, is with us through the grace of God that we have access to. The third thing about the Jubilee is there was rest. There was rest. There was rest from labor. Wasn't there? I talked about how that the land was given rest. There was no till in the ground. There was no sowing. There was no reaping. There was no pressing of the grapes. There was no pressing of the olives. All of that hard manual labor. And that farming was hard manual labor then for them, wasn't it? There was none of that to enjoy the blessings. There was rest. Rest for the land and rest for the people during the Jubilee. And is there not great rest for God's people? Even here in this life, oh, it's not perfect, but there's great rest for us. Jesus says over in Matthew 11th chapter, He says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. Oh, are not our souls in dire need of rest? Listen, if you're here and you're lost, you need the rest that only Jesus Christ can provide. Your soul is running here and there. We see people out in the world, they're just running here and there with no rest and no peace because they're trying to fill a void that only God can fill. And Jesus says, listen, take my yoke upon you. Come, learn of me. My yoke is easy, my burden is light, and I'll give you the rest that you're longing for. The rest in Jesus Christ. The writer of Hebrews over in the 4th chapter talks about it a little bit as well. He says in the 2nd chapter, he says, for unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. For we which have believed do enter into rest. As he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For we which have believed do enter into rest, as he said. He was talking about the Sabbath. He was talking about the Jews and the keeping of the Sabbath. And he was admonishing them. But listen, you don't have to worry about the keeping, the strict keeping of the Hebrew Sabbath and all those things. He's talking about the Sabbath was a picture of rest. Just like the Jubilee was a picture of great national rest. Not just individual rest, but rest for all of God's people. He says, listen, those of us that have believed by faith, we do enter into that rest. We don't have to show forth the picture of rest anymore because we truly have rest. Rest for our souls. Yes, our bodies still in this world. We got to get up and go to work and we have things that we have to do, all that. But listen, our souls have rest trusted Jesus Christ, don't they? Just like the song that we sang this morning that we commented upon, leaning on the everlasting arms, that's rest in Jesus Christ. When the world gets the better of us, when things begin to mount up, when the stresses of life mount up, what does the world use for an outlet? I don't know. Mostly destructive things, I can tell you that. But what we can do is lean into the everlasting arms. We can find rest in Jesus Christ in a way that no other can. That's the jubilee that we're living in of Jesus Christ, that we have true rest each and every day in Him. We can take our cares, all the things of the world, whatever it might be, and we can just lay them down at Jesus' feet and pray and take a deep breath and get a good night's sleep, can't we? I mean, if we really need to lay it down at Jesus' feet, have you ever been there? I've been there a couple of times. I just really had to lay it down. I had a lot of stress. But finally, when you just lay it all right down there and beg Jesus for rest, He'll say, I'll take it. I'll take it, and you rest. And He can give rest like no other. And so the rest of the Jubilee is upon us. The fourth thing is liberty. That was a big part of it. It was setting the captives at liberty. Those that had sold themselves into bondage or whatever, they had lived in bondage. Maybe their children even had been born in somebody else's house, living at somebody else's hand, in bondage to them. But when that day came, there was liberty. And that was the word I said that Jesus used, that Isaiah used, that Ezekiel used, that was specific to the Jubilee. Ezekiel calls it the Day of Liberty, referring to the whole year of Jubilee as the Day of Liberty. Liberty was a big part of it. But what we have through Jesus Christ is not that we have been set free to bond from bondage to some man or to something temporal like that that's going to have an end anyway, even if it's not an end until death. But we are set free from the bondage of sin. We are set free from the bondage of the sin nature. We are set free from being bound to our willfulness and our rebellion to God. We are chained to those things from our birth because of the fallen nature of man that we have inherited from Adam. But Jesus comes to set us free from that. He says, set the captives at liberty. What does He say over in Jesus speaking? John records it in the 8th chapter, 36th verse. He said, if the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. That is what Jesus offers, isn't it? True soul liberty. Escape from the bondage of sin and despair and death. And yes, even the bondage of the law. That was the great bondage that Paul was speaking of to the Jews. He was always trying to get them to see, you're not free. You're bound to the law, which can do nothing but condemn you because you can't keep it. And all the people out there that think that they can please God or work their way into heaven by their own good works, they're bound to the same law. In order to live by the law, you must keep all of it. And so those Jews, not only were they bound to sin as all men, Gentiles and Greeks and heathens and pagans alike, but they were bound to sin, but more over and above, they were bound to a law that could do nothing but condemn them. But what did Paul say about it? He said about salvation, about the gospel, about Jesus Christ, about the great gospel jubilee. Paul said in the 8th chapter of Romans, for ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. We've not received the spirit of bondage, but we've received the spirit of adoption. Now, if that's not freedom, I don't know what is. To be adopted into the very home, the very house of God, to be made a kinsman with His only begotten Son, that's freedom. If Jesus sets you free, you're free indeed. That's what He has offered. And that is what the year of Jubilee, the time of Jubilee in Jesus Christ, offers. Each and every one is to be set free. I mentioned, and I want us to get this, the chief aspect of that jubilee back there in Leviticus was the land. Yes, they were set free of the captives, but it was all about the land. And I mentioned how that the land is the foundation. The land is the foundation of all other blessings flow from that. And God made a way that it would never be removed. They would never, the blessing would be in perpetuity, never to be lost, because the land would never be lost for any one family. The foundation of our blessings is Jesus Christ. In the true Jubilee that Jesus proclaims, the foundation is not in the land, because we're not talking about temporal blessings. We're talking about spiritual blessings. And the foundation of each and every one of those is in Jesus Christ, founded upon His blood and His righteousness, and it will never fade away, and it will never be taken from us, and it will live on in perpetuity. Our foundation is secure, just like the year of liberty was to remind them that their foundation of prosperity for that family, though it might have been lost for a little while, was not gone for good. It would be returned. And so the foundation was never pulled out from under them. And that was true every day of the year. But the year of Jubilee is when they were materially reminded of it, because it really did pass back to them. But I want us to understand that in the Jubilee that Jesus Christ proclaims unto us, that foundation is secure. He said, "I am your rock. I am your Savior. I am your righteousness." That is the foundation of blessings. Not what you have done. Not how good you submit unto God. Not how good of a Christian you are. Not how many times you come to church. Not how often you pray. And we should do all of those things. But the foundation of our blessings, of the bounty, of the rest, of the liberty, the foundation of it is Jesus Christ. And just like those Israelites that lived generation after generation later, they didn't do anything to get the land. It was their forefathers that got the land. Really, it was God that got it for them even. They didn't do it. God said, "You didn't defeat those enemies. I defeated them." They didn't do anything to enjoy the blessing, and yet they had it, and it was secure, and God was reminding them each and every day. And as they look forward to that Jubilee year, they can be reminded that the foundation of the blessings of Jehovah shall never pass. And I want you to understand, if you're a child of God, the foundation of all the blessings that you have in this life and the next is Jesus Christ, and it shall never pass. It's always there. You can't trade it away. You can't sell it away. See, that was the thing. An Israelite couldn't get rid of it. He couldn't get rid of the claim to the land if he tried. He couldn't sell it off and get rid of it. Many would have done so if they had the ability, but God set it up so they couldn't. And you can't lose your salvation either. If you're a child of God, you can't lose it. It's not yours. God said, "It's mine." He said, "The land, you can't sell the land because it's not yours. It's mine anyway. I gave it to you as a foundation for blessing, but it's mine." Jesus Christ is His only begotten Son. You can't lose Jesus Christ as your foundation, no matter what you do or don't do, because He's God's. God has given Him to us through our salvation. The last thing I want to talk about, and this brings us full circle, I said that the day of Jubilee was truly a restoration. It was a resetting of things back to the way that they should be. The land went back into the families where it was supposed to be. Every Israelite went out free from wherever he was at. He might be in some other tribe's land. He may have gone down into the land of Midian and sold himself into slavery or whatever. But on that day of Jubilee, he came back home. He came back to the land of his fathers, to his ancestors. And things were set essentially the way that they were when God first ushered them into the promised land. When He set it up perfect the way that He wanted it, every 50 years when that Jubilee rolled around, it got reverted back to that. Now sin was still in the world and it was less than perfect, but I want you to see the picture. The picture was that what God had set in the beginning, that men had marred, they had sold it, they had leased it, they had messed it up, some had gotten rich and some had lost everything, but then it got reset back to the way God wanted it to be. There is a great restoration coming. That's what we proclaim when we come to heaven's Jubilee. Yes, there's a Jubilee, and I've talked about the Jubilee of the gospel and how that we can partake of that through Jesus Christ right now, here in this life. We can partake of the bounty of the grace of God through Jesus Christ. We can partake of the freeness of our souls, freedom from sin and bondage to sin through the blood of Jesus Christ. We can partake of the liberty that only Jesus can give, the soul liberty, the rest that we have. We can partake of the rest and all those things. But what is yet to come is the full restoration of all things. But it is coming. As sure as the Jubilee rolled around, as sure as God was pointing to His Messiah and Jesus ushered in the Jubilee age, I'm telling you, there's a full restoration coming. That has been the arc of God's intent from before the fall even. He created man. He created the Garden of Eden. He created everything perfect. He said, "It is very good." Now God knew what was going to happen. But before that, before He made the man, He made the plan, didn't He? And the part of that plan, the end state of that plan, was to restore everything back to the way it was supposed to be. God didn't just let Eden go and, "Well, we tried that, that's gone, let's come up with a new plan." That's always what God's intent has been. And I don't know what heaven's going to look like. I don't know what eternity's going to look like. But I think it's going to look a lot like the Garden of Eden looked to begin with, because God made it perfect and that's the way He wanted it. And He's going to restore all things. There's a great restoration coming. Let me just read a few scriptures, and you are familiar with that. "And I saw," Revelation 21 and 1, "and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and He will dwell with them, and they shall be His people. And God Himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away.' And He that sat upon the throne said, 'Behold, I make all things new.' And He said unto me, 'Write, for these words are true and faithful.' And He said unto me, 'It is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." That is the promise yet to come. The full realization of the Jubilee is the full restoration of God's perfect creation yet to come. Yet to come. We can experience some very good things. We've got an earnest of our salvation. But our salvation's not complete until the Jubilee is complete. And the Jubilee is complete in heaven. At that last day, when He restores all things back to the way He intended them to be. We've spent all this time from creation buying and selling and cutting up land and doing all the things to mess up what God has created. And I'm not just talking about the temple creation. I'm talking about that, and I'm talking about the spiritual. We've messed it all up. But God said, "There's a day coming where I'm going to set it right. And you will get to enjoy that setting right." And those that are children of God, there's a jubilee. Heaven's jubilee and the restoration of all things we have yet to look forward to. And so I remind you today, the jubilee year started with the sounding of a trumpet. And there's a day coming, we're told, that the angels are going to descend and the trump shall sound and time shall be no more. And that is the full realization of the Jubilee. Come to Jesus. If you don't know Jesus today, I ask you, come to Him. Come to Him for rest and restoration. There's rest in this life and there is full restoration in the next because of heaven's jubilee. And those of us that are children of God, let us rest assured. No matter what happens in this life, the ups and downs of it, there we are living in the gospel jubilee, and there is a full realization of the jubilee yet to come when God reclaims all things and sets all things right the way that they should be, and we shall enter into eternal rest with Him in heaven forever. That's what I'm looking forward to. It's heaven's jubilee. I appreciate you listening. I hope you all got something from it. I hope that the Lord was able to use this. And have a little, we all might have a deeper appreciation of how God weaves all these things together through the Old and the New Testament, how it all ties in and points to Jesus Christ and the great gift of restoration that He has promised us through Him. Heaven's Jubilee. Brother Dyer, if we can get a song.